Namote Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, chapter 19, entitled the Pung Shavana Ritualistic Ceremony. And we have a few verses today because there are no purports. But I think it's 25 on the board, right? Etach Charitva. So I'll just read texts 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, and then 24. Yeah, then I'll read the last verse because the last verse has no purport also. So text 19, 20, translation. One should accept this Vishnu Bhrata, which is a vow in devotional service, and should not deviate from its execution to engage in anything else. By offering the remnants of prasad, flower garlands, sandalwood pulp, and ornaments, one should daily worship the brahmanas and worship women who peacefully live with their husbands and children. Every day the wife must continue following the regulative principles to worship Lord Vishnu with great devotion. Thereafter, Lord Vishnu should be laid in his bed, and then one should take prasad. In this way, husband and wife will be purified and will have all their desires fulfilled. just something on the side. There's a movie that came out some years ago. It was called A Beautiful Life. Right, and the whole idea behind the film was that it showed how beautiful life can be. But actually, the film was full of misery. This is actually the beautiful life. We're reading how it should be conducted. Text number 21. The chaste wife must perform such devotional service continuously for 1 year. After 1 year passes, she should fast on the full moon day in the month of Kartik, October through November. Text number 22. On the morning of the next day, one should wash oneself, and after worshipping Lord Krishna as before, one should cook as one cooks for festivals, as stated in the Griha Shastras. Sweet rice should be cooked with ghee, and with this preparation, the husband should offer oblations to the fire 12 times. Text number 23. Thereafter, one should satisfy the brahmanas. When the satisfied brahmanas bestow their blessings, he should devotedly offer them respectful obeisances with his head, and with their permission, he should take prasad. 24. Before taking his meal, the husband must first seat the acharya comfortably, and along with his relatives and friends, should control his speech and offer prasad to the guru. Then the wife should eat the remnants of the oblation of sweet rice cooked with ghee. Eating the remnants ensures a learned, devoted son and all good fortune. You can hardly imagine anyone in society doing this. Unheard of. Text number 25, please repeat. Etach charitva vidavad vratam vibhor abhipipsitartam labhate puman Iha Shri Chaitad Ashtaya Labheta Saubhagam Shriyam Prajam Jivapatim Yasho graham etas charitva vidavad vratam vibho avipsatartam lavate pumanniham avipsatartam lavate pumanniham sri chaitadashtaya labhita sobhagam sri chaitadashtaya labhita sobhagam Shriyam Prajam Jiva Patinja Sogriham Shriyam Prajam Jiva Patinja Sogriham Itas Charitva Viravad Vratang Vibho Abhipsatartam Labhate Punang Iha Sri Chaitadashtaya Lavita Shobhagam Shriyam Brajam Jiva Patinja Sogriham Shriyam Prajam Jiva Patinja Sogriham Ladies. Touch this. Charitma performing. Vidhivat according to the injunctions of Shastra. Vratam vow. Vibho from the Lord. Abhipsita desired. Artam object. Labhate Labhate Labhate, gets, puman, a man, iha, in this life, sri, a woman, cha, and, etat, this, ashtaya, performing, labheta, can get, saubhagam, good fortune, shriyam, opulence, prajam, progeny, Jivapatin, a husband with a long duration of life. Yashah, good reputation. Griham, home. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. In this vow or ritualistic ceremony, if this vow or ritualistic ceremony is observed, according to the description of Shastra, even in this life a man will be able to achieve all the benedictions he desires from the Lord. A wife who performs this ritualistic ceremony will surely receive good fortune, opulence, sons, a long-living husband, a good reputation, and a good home. Purport. In Bengal, even today, if a woman lives for a long time with her husband, she is considered very fortunate. A woman generally desires a good husband, good children, a good home, prosperity, opulence, and so on. As recommended in this verse, a woman will receive all these desirable benedictions, and a man will also be able to receive all benedictions from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, by performing this particular type of vrata, a man and a woman in Krishna consciousness will be happy in this material world. And because of being Krishna conscious, they will be promoted to the spiritual world. So, we're going to finish the last text with no purport, which is text 26 through 28. Translation. If an unmarried girl observes this vrata, she will be able to get a very good husband. If a woman who is avira, who has no husband or son, executes this ritualistic ceremony, she can be promoted to the spiritual world. A woman whose children have died after birth can get a child with a long duration of life and also become very fortunate in possessing wealth. If a woman is unfortunate, she will become fortunate. And if ugly, she will become beautiful. By observing this vrata, a diseased man can gain relief from his disease and have an able body with which to work. If one recites this narration while offering oblations to the pitas and demigods, especially during the Shraddha ceremony, the demigods and inhabitants of Pitriloka will be extremely pleased with him and bestow upon him the fulfillment of all desires. After one performs this ritualistic ceremony, Lord Vishnu and his wife, Mother Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, are very pleased with him. O King Parikit, now I have completely described how Diti performed this ceremony and had good children, the Maruts, and a happy life. I have tried to explain this to you as elaborately as possible. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 6th canto, 19th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Performing the Pungshavana Ritualistic Ceremony, and also the end of the 6th canto. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om Jnana Timidandasya Giranjana Shalakaya Chakshumulitam Jena Tasmai Sigurvinima. Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Shvabadandikam Vum Guru Divachalam Pangam Langayate Girim Agipadam Aham Vande Sigurum Dinatadunam. Translation again. If this vow or ritualistic ceremony is observed according to the description of Shastra, even in this life a man will be able to achieve all the benedictions he desires from the Lord. A wife who performs this ritualistic ceremony will surely receive good fortune, opulence, sons, a long-living husband, a good reputation, and a good home. The first question that comes to my mind in this purport that Srila Prabhupada mentions, and there might be many reasons, but I'm curious if anyone else knows why Srila Prabhupada would say in Bengal, even today, if a woman lives for a long time with her husband, she is considered very fortunate. Outside of the obvious that the protection is there, that the husband is there, but is it something that maybe the husbands are leaving early or dying prematurely? I don't know if anyone has an answer. I'm curious why Srila Prabhupada would make this point. But we can understand certainly that, and please let me know if you think of something, but it makes sense that because in society now there are so many broken families that having the father there is very important. Srila Prabhupada points out here, a woman is generally desirous of a good husband, good children, a good home, prosperity, and opulence, and so on. And Lord Rishabhadev also makes this point, Punkshastriya Matuni Bhavam Etan, that this attraction between male and female is the principle, is the main principle of material existence. And that, as it develops, ato griha kshateshu tapta vittaya, that one gradually wants, as Srila Prabhupada points out here, good husband, home, property, griha. People are very concerned about their grihas. Actually, even in modern society, we can, if you look at the housing market, it seems to be a barometer for materialistic living. Because as the housing market goes up, people are very happy and they're spending so much money for cars, whatever, swimming pools, TVs, their saunas, their pool tables, their gym rooms. It goes on and on and on. So, but when the housing market bottoms out, then all of a sudden people stop spending and everyone is in anxiety. People are disturbed in so many different ways. And it, again, it's reflected in the rest of the capitalistic lifestyle, or materialistic lifestyle for that matter. So the attraction for home is very strong, and what to speak of property. We were talking with one devotee the other day, and they were commenting how a friend of theirs had amassed so many different properties, and 5 or 6 or maybe more, I can't remember, but a number of properties. They lived just south of here toward Laguna Beach, and they were so so controlling of their properties and so intent on them, so that to the point where the family, the rest of the family members, they all had their own houses, but the father was so such a controller that the rest of the whole family got disturbed and moved out of their houses. So the houses are sitting there empty. There's 8 or 9 houses. And the family, the kids, even the wife, she's trying to figure out what to do. But everybody's moved out, and they live in their own private or own individual places. So, again, we become so absorbed in material life, it just escalates, that we become totally attached to the grihas, the property, the sutta, the children, and people go to great extremes. trying to protect or please or accommodate their children, and their relatives. The relatives are always demanding so many things. We go to the weddings, we go to the funerals. Actually, we're really not interested in any of it. We're just wondering, is there any money left over that we can all split up? When we go to those funerals, it's the reality of it is that Vitaira, again, we're interested in the wealth. So this is basically material life. And we're trying to make it beautiful, right? Just like this movie that came out years and years. I think they play it once a year during Christmas time, right? Just to get everyone into the Christmas spirit. Although it's really a miserable film, that the person, the main character, goes through all sorts of tribulation, loses his family or loses his house or something like that, but then the Lord gives him mercy, gives him some special attention or whatever, and he gets the money that he needs to pay the mortgage. So it's a beautiful life. But actually, the unfortunate thing is that we don't know what real beauty is. Chanakya Pandit describes that the beauty of the cuckoo is in its notes, right? When the cuckoo bird sings in the evening, it's very melodic and very attractive. It's like in, we used to live in Tucson, and there was this one area that you could drive along the riverbank. There were some trees there. I forget what kind of trees they were. They grow here also. But at a certain time of the day, there would be hundreds of cuckoos in those bushes. And it was just thunderous. But their voices were very melodic, very pleasing. So Chanakya Pandit describes that the beauty of the cuckoo is its notes. And he explains that also for the ugly person, knowledge is beauty, right? The most unkept person, if they, as soon as they begin to speak, just like Judd Bard, for instance, is a very good example. Although he's a great soul. Who was it, the king? The Rahugana? Rahugana thought he was just some useless person, some dumb person. And I just wanted to grab him off the road and have him carry his palanquin. But as soon as Judd Bharat began to speak, he was astounded. He was awestruck. So even one may be ugly and unqualified according to material estimation, as soon as they speak transcendental knowledge, it becomes very beautiful and attractive, and people are very much interested, moved. Just like some time back, there was this one lady singer. I was reading some article about her. She's from England, and sort of a homely looking person, but as soon as she began to sing. I think it was some show here, American Idol. As soon as she began to sing, everyone was, oh, they all stood up and they clapped for her. They appreciated her. And so, again, there's different types of beauty. But Chanakya Pandit, finally, he comments that the ascetic, his beauty is forgiveness. The ascetic is so detached from material life, they become very powerful in their powers, spiritual powers. But their real beauty is when they give mercy to the suffering souls, those who are struggling in material life. So that's another form of beauty. Finally, he makes point that the beauty of a woman is her devotion to the husband. This whole chapter is all about how Diti, being guided by a proper husband. Of course, that devotion means a qualified husband. It's not like we have in present-day society where better that you kick the guy out. Don't deal with him. He's a loser. And that's the general trend in present society. But in a Krishna-conscious setting, as Prabhupada points out here, by performing this particular type of vritta, a man and woman in Krishna consciousness will be happy in this material world. Again, we're looking for happiness, but really that happiness, it comes when the center of that relationship or the center of one's activities in life are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, when he's the center of it all. And when we're dependent on that, dependent on the Personality of Godhead, as Prabhupada points out here, that all these benedictions that the man and woman may desire will be given or are given by the Personality of Godhead. And by performing this particular type of vrata in a proper mentality, all the desired results will be achieved. Krishna is fulfilling all desires. And we're so fortunate to be in Krishna consciousness for that reason. We're so fortunate. It's a very nice verse. Because when you compare to what's going on in society in general, how people are being cheated in so many in obvious ways, but still they're not seeing it. Just like yesterday or the other day, we went to see Larry the Laughing Yogi, or whatever his name is. It was just remarkable how people are so gullible, or I'm not sure what they're thinking, that this young man comes out, he sits in a chair, and he looks... he gets in his yogic posture, and everyone is sitting there with their eyes closed, and there's some kind of music in the background, some mantras going on, and this goes on for, 10 minutes, 15 minutes or something, and then finally he opens his eyes, and then everyone else is asked to open their eyes. And then they're told to look into his eyes. right? And then he looks around at everybody. He doesn't say a word. For whatever reason, maybe he has nothing good to say. I don't know. But he's there looking at everyone, and then all of a sudden he starts laughing. He doesn't say anything. He just starts, right? Actually, prior to this, before he even gets on stage, this is, I couldn't understand this at all. People were listening to this music, this background music with mantras. And then periodically somebody in the corner would just burst out and start laughing. Maybe somebody was tickling them, or I don't know, but somebody would start laughing over here. And then a minute later, somebody would start laughing out loud over here. And then somebody else in the front would just burst out laughing. You couldn't help but laugh yourself just thinking about it, just being there. So then finally, Doug. Doug. Master Doug comes out, and he's in his chair, and Guruji, and he's looking at people, and then he starts laughing, and somebody laughs back at him, and then he laughs a little bit harder, and then somebody else laughs a little bit harder, and then all of a sudden he closes his eyes, and he looks like he's about ready to cry, and then maybe some people were crying, I don't know. But he does this through the whole 40 minutes. And doesn't say a word. And then, again, closes his eyes. Everybody closes their eyes as well. And he gets up and walks away. And I'm trying to figure out what did we go through just now? I couldn't figure it out. And I asked our host, what sort of philosophy do you have? Are there any books or scripture? And the host said, well, you know, I like Buddhism. I like Sufism. Yeah, okay, that's nice, but what is this philosophy all about? And she couldn't give an answer. It was just all about, it was some circular answer that just didn't really mean anything. It's all about finding your inner self and bringing it out, revealing it, just do whatever you want, she was telling the audience. And the audience was mixed. They were middle-aged people. And it was just, it was really unfortunate, honestly, that there are so many people out there who are looking or wanting something. But unfortunately, they've met charlatans or they're being misguided. Just as there's a very nice verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam where the sages are speaking to Suta Goswami, and they explain to him that we think that it's by the will of providence. What is that verse, Archita Prabhu? Tvam na sandarshito drishtva, the first line, that we think it the will of providence that we've met Srila Prabhupada, there's no doubt. We're so fortunate to have met Srila Prabhupada and are accepting him as our captain to cross over this ocean of material existence. Because in general, there's that person is not there in the lives of the people in general. Instead, they're being cheated by such persons who have no idea. They have absolutely no idea what they're doing and why they're doing it. We didn't witness any of the blessings, but everybody gives blessings. Everybody left and right gives blessings. If you feel some need, or if you have some question in life, then you turn to your neighbor, and the neighbor gives you blessings. So, as if everybody's qualified to give blessings. We understand that a blessing should come from the exalted Vaishnavas, from the exalted devotees. But it's a common thing in society nowadays. God bless you, and bless you this, bless you that. And we weren't touched in the forehead. Sirdas was. He was given a blessing before we started. And that's probably why when the devotees were doing their bit, the whole crowd stood up and they began to chant and dance enthusiastically. Just like sometimes we have our kirtans here, the devotees are quite energetic and ecstatic. These people, and there were 500. It wasn't just 40 or 50 people. It was over 500 people who got up and were just running around in circles, chanting and dancing. The rest of the time, they may have been crying, or they were trying to get into the mood of Yogi Doug. But it just was not there. When they started their meditation, it was they did some breathing exercise, which was maybe just the hyperventilating got them excited and got them into the proper mood. I don't know, but it's just a cheating process. And we're so fortunate, therefore, to have this process of Krishna consciousness, as Prabhupada points out here, that when we perform our activities with Krishna, with Krishna in mind, in the proper state, then everything is successful, and that we shouldn't come to Krishna consciousness with any other motive. One shouldn't come to spiritual life with any other motive. There's a very nice pastime or a story given by one very exalted Vaishnava disciple of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, where when he first came to see Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, he had heard about the devotees, but he was still on the fence. Just like sometimes we're not so sure about what Krishna consciousness is all about. So this person also had some reservations. Just like, again, we may be leaning toward Krishna consciousness, but we have reservations about this person or this function, whatever. So this person, this Vaishnava also had some reservations, but they were fascinated by the blissful and busy atmosphere which was there in the temple. Just like sometimes people come here, they're also fascinated by all these things going on, right? The Artik, devotees walking here, going there, they're working, they're getting out in Harinam, they're coming back from book distribution, or they're serving the deities, etc. It's fascinating, but still, again, there may be some reservations. But as soon as he heard what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had to say to the guests who had come to this particular function, it revolutionized his outlook. It sealed it. And what he said was, please don't deceive me. And as people were walking away, they became a little curious. And then again, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta began to speak. And he said that you've come here with the intention to serve Krishna. But now I see that I've seen that you've come here with the intention to serve Krishna, and therefore I've become attached to you. And we have practical experience of that. When people come to Krishna consciousness, we become naturally attached to them. We become attached to the visitors. We become attached to a spiritual master, becomes attached to the disciple. We become very attached. But now I see that you're going away. And you've only come here for some out of fashion. Now you're returning back to your homes and doing whatever you're going to do. And therefore I feel that you've deceived me. It's a very interesting presentation. Just like when people come here, they come here with the intent to serve Krishna, right? But for some reason, they go away. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was making that point. Of course, this might have been just casual visitors. But his intent, his vision was that these people are coming to serve Krishna, and you should stay. There's no reason to do anything else. So he says therefore I feel deceived that you're coming and now you're going. And we may respond that, no, Prabhupada, I just have some business to attend to. I have a few things I have to take care of, and I'll be back. Right? Sometimes people say like that, I just have a few more things I have to do with the family, and I'll be back. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta responded that, I say, no, there is no need for it. Or so someone may say, but I have to go home and the house is burning. And as soon as I put the fire out, I'll be right back. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta responded again that, no, I say again that there's no need for it. Even if the world is burning, one should not waste time to go and try and put it out. Because all necessities, he very nicely describes this, all necessities can be met by Krishna. And we have no other obligation or object of self-interest except Krishna. And he concludes by saying, all fulfillment reposes in Krishna's lotus feet. So we're so fortunate that we have the association of a proper leader. We have the association of a proper society, proper system. And when it's all engaged in Krishna consciousness properly, then, as Prabhupada points out here, one will be happy in this material world. And because of being Krishna conscious, they will be promoted to the spiritual world. So, these are just some thoughts that I had on this. There's so many wonderful points that Srila Prabhupada makes in this purport, but for lack of time, we'll end there. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu.
You asked the question to this person about, like, what is that in the scriptures, or how, what's your reference? And it is said in our scriptures that Sruti Smriti Puranadi, anything that is done without reference to scriptures is just a disturbance. And there was a church which my nephews were going when they were children, and they came back very upset to my sister, and they say, we don't want to go to that church. And she said, why? She said, because everybody's crying there. And apparently they have like a therapeutic way where they cry and cry. That's part of the ritual, just to cry. And then we see other churches don't have that, but that's particular church, you know, they just decided
this one,
to do
this
that.
One too. They had Kleenex boxes spread throughout all the hall. There were Kleenex boxes. Even somebody was walking around making sure that everybody who was seated had got one or two Kleenexes.
Then also, we long time ago, we heard about, you know, Rajanish. He had his people yelling at each other, pulling their hair, fighting, and let those emotions going out like that, and on like that. Yeah. But if you ask them, what is that reference scripture, you know, who is the sadhu, the scriptures, who's backing up, they don't. Only that one person who concocts.
Yeah. The people in general, though, were very nice people. I don't want no misconceptions about that. The people were very nice and polite. But misguided. So you know, as members of the Krishna Conscious Movement, we have a great responsibility to try and help and guide these innocent persons in the proper way. And there's just a lack of it tremendously in all of society. It's so unfortunate. Srila Prabhupada ki jaya.
Excuse me?